You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So yesterday, after the press conference from the Prime Minister, a new document came out from Sage. It was minutes from a meeting they had in late September. Now, Katie, this has dominated headlines, although not most of the papers because they'd gone to press before then. But what does it say? Why is it so explosive?
So what the document says and what it records is the fact that SAGE, the body of scientists that advise the government, put to the government that they should take a number of actions in order to stem the spread of the virus and prevent increases to the virus that would lead to a rise in hospital cases. And top of this list is the idea of a circuit break. Now, we did hear about a circuit break around the time of this evidence dates back to. We knew it was something that the government was considering, but I think, and a circuit break, just for those who don't listen to this podcast every day, what are you doing with your lives, is a situation where schools would stay open in theory, but for 2 weeks, you'd have a short closing down of various parts and lots of parts of the economy, the hospitality, other aspects. And after that, in a way, you'd pause the virus and you'd get to a more manageable level before picking up things again. And I think part of the idea too, when you heard about it back then, was you might do it in the October half term, and then actually kids aren't going to school anyway, so even though you're not closing schools, you're not going to school. But what the minutes suggest is that this wasn't a suggestion to do in October. The idea was actually to do it immediately, and that's something the government did not decide to do. Also, various other measures. So the one that Boris Johnson did do was the advice to work from home if you can. We did see that change, I think, the day after this. Also talking about closing hospitality venues, mixing with households, so a ban on mixing with other households. Now, some of these measures did be put in place, but they were put in place in specific parts of the UK of higher infection rates. So I think that quite quickly you're seeing people say, well, you didn't take drastic enough action early on, and that's why we're now in this situation. I think that what is interesting is we clearly, in the first stage, I don't know what stage we're currently in, but you know, in the initial stages of coronavirus with the first lockdown, what you kept hearing the government say was, we are following the scientific advice. And you even heard it when things went wrong. I think it began to be seen as almost a bit of a cover for the government saying, we've done what the scientists said at every point. And the advice from the scientists has been evolving. There was a point, you know, in face masks, where people remember, for example, even the deputy medical officer Jenny Harris talking about how mass events weren't such a problem, and now the idea of mass events obviously feels quite foreign. So I think that it's clear that the government now see it as a wider picture in terms of the various people they want to listen to before making a decision. I think it's worth flagging that you're looking at this date in September where this minutes date back to. Around that time, you had Boris Johnson seek the opinion of other scientists too. That was the weekend that Boris Johnson got figures such as Anders Tegnell, something we revealed on Coffee House, behind the Swedish approach, and also people like Sunetra Gupta and Carl Hennigan, recent guests on Spectator TV. We got a plug in. You can find that on YouTube, but to go and give alternative theories. So it's not so much that Boris Johnson isn't listening to the scientists at all, but it's quite clear that the idea that SAGE says something and the government does it is not the case. And I think that is leading to criticism, but at the same time, we're hearing from the other side, particularly Tory MPs, that they think what the Prime Minister announced yesterday went too far. So he can't please everyone, but I think the big theme now is, should he have been more drastic sooner?
James, on Spectator TV, second plug of the episode, last week we heard from Pat Leahy, the political editor of the Irish Times, who talked about Ireland's politicians rejecting the scientific advice and said it was a resetting of relations between scientists and politicians. So have we seen a similar resetting in the UK just behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think that basically what's clear is in Ireland the scientists wanted to go to level 5, which is something kind of roughly equivalent to a circuit break, like a lockdown that Katie was just talking about. And instead, Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar and their coalition government decided only to move very gradually to level 3, from level 2 to level 3. And so you've essentially seen the same thing happening in the UK as in the Republic of Ireland. And I think this is actually kind of sums up the problem for Boris Johnson, which is when Leo Varadkar spoke up, Leo Varadkar had a kind of quite sharp rebuke to the scientists. He got lots of Tory MPs, including lots of people who during the Brexit process, you know, Leo Varadkar being the ultimate bogeyman, who started praising Varadkar and saying, oh, why can't Boris Johnson be more like this? Well, he has been more like this behind the scenes. And I think the problem for Boris Johnson is it's very hard for him to please everybody right now, or anybody actually. And if you look yesterday, when Boris Johnson announced the new restrictions in the Commons, Lindsay Hoare, the Speaker of the House of Commons, another person disgruntled with the government, feeling that Parliament hasn't been treated with sufficient respect, made Boris Johnson give his very long statement, take lots of questions. In the first 50 minutes, I only counted two positive questions. Nearly all of them were either questioning, bordering on negative, or outright hostile. But then at the press conference last night, Chris Whitty, standing at the next door podium to Boris Johnson, said, look, these level three restrictions, I'm not confident, and no one is confident that they go far enough to control the virus. Local public health officers are going to have to layer more measures on top of that, e.g. outright shut. I mean, he didn't say this bit, but the clear implication of that was outright shut hospitalities, basically. And in another answer, he essentially suggested that everything other than schools should be in the mix for possible closures to try and control the virus. And I think this is the problem for Boris Johnson, which is when triangulation works, you basically say there's this extreme position over here, this extreme position over there. I am a sensible person in the middle. I think the problem for Boris Johnson right now is he's been pulled. People are beginning to realise this is a seesaw, so they're making ever more dramatic demands on him. And, you know, Boris Johnson is basically stuck in a virus vice where whichever way he goes, you know, the other side turn it a bit more.
Katie, is this position tenable when it comes to the science? Obviously, as James mentioned, Chris Whitty pretty publicly said that he didn't have confidence, that Tier 3 was enough. The SAGE documents obviously say that the scientists want to go further. So can Boris keep, you know, batting off these demands to go stricter lockdown?
I think the direction we're heading in is one of stricter lockdown and stricter measures. I think, though, we have seen yesterday, if you look at the local authorities, the fact that Boris Johnson said Steve Rotherham's name about 20 times.
Steve Rotherham then immediately came out and said, I didn't do a deal with it.
Turns out Labour politician in Liverpool doesn't really want to sing about doing allegedly a deal with a Tory Prime Minister. But the fact that he wanted to make such a big thing of it was partly because they feel that the other metro mayors who have not done the same, and it's very hard to put an area in Tier 3, so very high, if the local authorities won't go along with it. Now, there was a clear implication yesterday that they will do so anyway if nothing gives. But I think it points to the complication that even if Boris Johnson wants to just do exactly what SAGE says, he would come under fire. I think that there are complications with putting something into an area on a localised level if the local authorities don't want to go along with it.
I think there's also another complication, which is where is the public mood right now? Everyone says, oh, public polls suggest the restrictions don't go far enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But first of all, the number of people who think the restrictions go too far is definitely ticking up, 19% in the latest YouGov. And also, I think, as James Johnson points out in his blog on Coffee House, people are taking more discretion for themselves. And I think this is a question which is, and I think this is definitely the view of quite a few people, the Manchester MPs, was this. If you closed hospitality, it isn't like people would stop seeing anybody else. But they would simply, lots of people would simply go and have a drink at their friend's flat or house, or families would think, oh, we know each other really well, we'll be quite safe, we'll get together. And so the question then becomes, you know, is this kind of abstinence only approach to seeing people outside your household sensible? Or should you be going for a kind of safe socializing thing and saying, which is what I think is undoubtedly true, which is if people are sitting in a pub or a restaurant with another household and it's full of signs about stay 2 meters apart, hands, face, space, all that stuff, people are probably more likely to, and obviously other people are watching you too, you're more likely to observe social distancing than if you're inside the privacy of somebody else's home. And I think this is the question now, which is, if you had a national circuit break, and if you shut hospitality full stop, and would people obey the rules as scrupulously as they did back in March? Or would people think, well, I'm only going to see the next door neighbours and we won't be that long and we'll wash our hands, so we'll do that because we're going to do this responsibly. And however good intentions people have when they start off doing that, I think the evidence suggests that as the visit wears on, people fall back into their old habits and don't observe social distancing. So I think this is another complicating factor, which is, can you do this effectively? And I think this is another problem for Boris Johnson, which is, it's kind of a slight theme in the SAGE minutes about that basically, because public compliance is not perfect, you kind of have to ramp up the level of restrictions. The problem is, if you ramp up the level of the restrictions, more people feel that these restrictions are unreasonable or you can't live with them, and so start taking on discretion for themselves about what to do.
I think it's also the politics of all this, in the sense that had Boris Johnson gone for that circuit breaker when Sage had suggested it, I mean, Tory MPs were upset enough by a 10 p.m. curfew. Now, I think you can argue that a 10 p.m. curfew is particularly triggering because there is little evidence for it. It looks counterproductive when you see some of the pictures of people leaving, you know, venues at 10 p.m. But the idea that that would have sailed through, I think that there is a risk that perhaps Labour would have supported it, so it would have been fine anyway. But I think to go for anything that drastic, when a lot of Tory MPs, and this isn't just fringe figures or the most lockdown sceptic like Steve Baker or even Graham Brady, there are a lot of figures who have reservations about the government strategy. And also doubt Sage. I think it is worth remembering that Sage, if you look, you know, with hindsight, which is obviously a great thing to have, and you can't in real time, but if you look with hindsight, lots of the suggestions Sage had, not everything has stood the test of time. So I think that even if he had immediately gone for that, there would have been bumps along the way. Now, I think the difficulty for Boris Johnson is he just simply cannot win on this. The more we do things, the more cases are going to go up. And I think part of the issue is he hasn't really articulated his general strategy, in the sense that, talking about getting a vaccine, yesterday in the Commons Chamber, when pressed, he suggested we may not even get a vaccine. Now, I think what Boris Johnson and Chris Whitty, Matt Hancock are banking on could be a vaccine, it could be mass rapid testing, and it could just be clinical treatments improving. But he's not crystal clear, ultimately, about what the strategy is for the next 6 months. And I think that if you want to bring more people with you, it might be time to have that conversation where you're talking about the trade-offs in more detail and why he's chosen this path. And I'm not saying it would win every Tory MP over, but I think there is still this level of frustration that people think they are not being given all the facts.
I also think one of the other things that makes it difficult, just to pick up on Katie's point there, is, you know, this is what the Sage minutes say. Overall, the evidence base on which to judge the effectiveness and harms associated with different interventions is weak, right? And this is the problem. This is an inevitable problem, which is you're dealing with a new virus, you're trying things that I don't think any of us have, you know, hasn't been tried in anyone's lifetime, you know, if ever, to try and control the spread of the virus. And so I think this is the other issue, which is life would be much simpler for Boris Johnson if he could go and say there is 100% scientific consensus that this is what we should do, not that. The problem is there are kind of diverging sciences. There's a whole spectrum of opinion now. And Boris Johnson is, I think, right to say that Chris Whitty is somewhere in the middle of that spectrum. But what's hard, difficult, is you can't say with certainty which lever you pull to bring the R number down.
And meanwhile, yesterday we also found out a little bit more about what being each of the tiers means. And in tier three, it means that pubs close if they are wet pubs, but not if they serve main courses or what is called a substantial meal. So, i.e. food establishments can still stay open. Katie, what do you make of this distinction of a substantial meal compared to just drinking?
I think it's a really interesting distinction, Cindy. I think we need more details, because on the morning round today, they suggested that things like crisps would not count as a substantial meal. But I think that there are going to be questions asked about how many appetizers you need. There's also something that's quite interesting that's happening in New York. I've got a friend who lives in New York, and some of these bars, because they've got similar rules there, have found a way to stay open, and it's called the Cuomo menu.
Okay.
Which is basically dishes that bars have just come up with very quickly as a way to stay open. They don't normally do food, and I think quite basic hot dogs, not necessarily looking particularly edible, are one of the things you see a lot of, and also very small bowls of chili. So I think that when you're crossing the divide, lots of pubs are probably going to be looking at their menus. But as someone who, on a personal level, is quite interested in having about four small plates rather than a main course sometimes, I am interested to see if we can get further clarification. I also think there is an argument that crisps can be substantial, particularly if you have a crisp sandwich, but also if you just have a couple of bags. So I wouldn't want discrimination against that.
Well, it's quite philosophical, isn't it? When is an appetizer a main course, and how many appetizers does it take to...
James, you're quite healthy. Do you have any thoughts on this?
James is packing his lunches.
So Rob Jenrick was saying something that what he thought would constitute a main meal would be a kind of Cornish pasty with a side salad. I personally think, that not to sound like kind of grandpa, the improvement in the quality of pub food in the last 20-odd years or so is... remarkable. But I think the kind of challenge is going to become, we love a bit of nitpicking about the rules. And there's obviously, I think you can already read the newspaper features, you know, someone getting the rather enviable job of being sent to 5 different pubs to find out how much food precisely you have to order for people to be prepared to serve you drink.
Sounds like a job for Katie Balls.
Yeah, I mean, I've long been a supporter of a Glaswegian salad, which is also just known as a bowl of chips.
Katie and James, thanks very much.